Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Do, re, mi. Do, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do.
What are you doing?
Me, 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 me. Thanks, cool.
All right. All right. Okay, so we start off every show. Don't know if you know this, but with a singing competition. So I get to choose the song, and you're going to sing it.
Okay. What's the song?
I don't know.
Okay.
I was joking.
Happy birthday?
You seem to be ready for it, though.
I mean,
I respect that.
I don't.
I wasn't sure about you. Like, you seem like you could be a karaoke guy or a not karaoke guy.
No.
No, I'm not either. Our friends had a karaoke party over the weekend, and I did not go.
Yeah.
You
didn't even go?
No. Like, that was the day I went to see Dune with my brothers, and got home. I had, like, 30 minutes, but I'm like, I'm just going to stay home. I'm done. I was socialed out.
I would rather go see Dune than go to a karaoke party.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did.
That's so good call.
I stayed home with Archer, but anyway, you ready to roll and rock? Or not rolling rock, that's an alcohol, but
from the rock glass and roll. Line tanks of Old Latrobe.
Is it?
Yeah, rolling rock.
Oh, okay then.
Do we have to cheers?
Sure, let's cheers.
Oh, yeah.
Clinking. All right. Welcome, everyone, to episode 125 of the Goulet Pencast. My name is Drew.
And I'm Brian.
That's right. And we are here to deliver to you this casual and informal, tangential and extraneous, superfluous and extemporaneous fountain pen show where we talk about what's going on at the Goulet Pen Company and in our fountain pen lives. In this episode, we're going to talk about the big deal that is Ultim. We're going to sniff some inks. We're going to see some of Brian's abominations, some of his Franken pens, and much more. So get ready. We are absent Mr. Goulet today, but we have an alternate Brian filling his shoes, and it's going to be miraculous and incredible. So I hope you are buckled in and ready for a wild ride. Without further ado, we are going to read some feedback, Brian.
Okay, feedback time.
That's right. I'm going to kick us off here with some feedback from Joey Trejo. And Joey says, "Hey, it's good that you're back. I'd love to hear more about what you are all thinking regarding Lamy's transition and new ownership. What are some of your hopes, expectations, and concerns? I can see both positives and some points that might be seen as a negative. If talking about Lamy specifically is not possible, how about what's generally happened when a fountain pen company is bought by another? Feel better, Drew." Thank you, Danny. I do feel better. I'm still a little coughing, so I apologize in advance if I need to turn away and cough, but I feel great, so thank you. I did get a lot of feedback about my voice.
You sounded good.
Delightfully low, yeah. Unfortunately, I am just now, I have just the negative parts of being sick, which is a cough and none of the fun, positive graveliness. What were you smiling about?
It's funny, you sounded like you had been smoking for 10 years.
I've never smoked once.
That's good. Don't do it.
So Joey, yes, he mentions Lamy's sale. Lamy has been sold. It is public information. They have been sold to Mitsubishi Uni, which is a pencil company out of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big deal last week. In addition to the Dark Lilac launch, that happened. And I don't have a ton of information. I want to go ahead and acknowledge it because it is a big deal. But we will no doubt have more information on this as it develops, as we get more information. And I'm sure Brian Goulet will have a ton to say about it when he gets back. But I mean, I don't have any like negative first impressions. I mean, I have no reason to believe that Lamy is going to stop being Lamy, but it's pretty early.
I would agree. I don't see anything like, there's no warning signs that say it's going to be a bad thing. Mitsubishi Pencil Company, Uni, they make so many different pens and pencils. They make some of the really nice mechanical pencils. So there's a lot of technology swap that could happen between the two companies, and it could lead to some really interesting products.
That's kind of how I feel. Like, if Lamy, like, just Lamy being sold is kind of a big deal, but like, if Lamy being sold was an inevitability, I'm glad that it went to a writing company.
Yeah.
Like, it could have been easily purchased by some massive corporation that has 1,000 different companies and 1,000 different Fields, yeah. but it was purchased by a Japanese writing company. So I'm not mad at that. Like, yeah. from what I have seen in the writing industry, Japanese-owned writing companies tend to do really well by their customers. So, no red flags over here.
No, I would agree. It'll be really interesting to see how it pans out. I have an odd feeling that it's not going to be too crazy.
Yeah, there's a high likelihood that nothing will change at all.
Yeah.
So, all right. Thank you, Joey. From our friend Serendipity, she comes to us and says, you speculated about what suggestions YouTube shows your viewers about after too many pen casts. Talking about kind of the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to confirm that I'm getting ads for safety razors. Thanks, Drew. You can actually thank this guy for that. And suggestions for power washing videos to relax to. Thanks, Brian.
Those are nice.
And I'm sure it's only a matter of time before I start seeing hammers. I do have a question for Brian K. I need to hear the story about the pen he got from the astronaut.
Oh.
Please. Do you have a short version of that?
I do have a short version. Let's see. So my girlfriend in high school, her uncle was an astronaut, went to space multiple times. Nice guy. He had this pen. He didn't do anything with it. He gave it to his sister, my girlfriend's mother.
Right?
Mont Blanc. Yeah. Yes. Nice pen. And so for high school graduation, it was gifted to me because I liked writing instruments. And I used it a few times and it dried out super fast. So I was like, meh. Well, I didn't
stupid
throw it.
Stupid
fountain pen. So I put it back, cleaned it out, put it back in its box. And fast forward a couple years, I'm going to an interview at the Goulet Pen Company. I'm like, you know what? I should probably whip out the nice pen. So I tucked that bad boy right in my pocket and walked in with a pen that we don't sell.
I mean, it had a story behind it, though.
It did. I
interviewed with you and you had a story and it was fascinating. I was like, yeah, that's the guy with the astronaut pen, you know?
Yep. That's it.
Stuck in
now you know.
The only reason you were hired, yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess I can.
No, my question to you now is, knowing what you know and having come as far as you've been able to come in terms of fountain pen know-how and repair and troubleshooting, mm-hmm. how's that pen writing now?
It's been changed.
Oh.
We'll get to it later.
Oh, is that the... Oh, no.
Yeah. Surprise!
I didn't. Oh no. Okay.
Yeah. We'll check back. We'll circle back around to that one.
So it's kind of writing great and kind of writing not at all. No, at the same time.
It writes pretty darn good.
Okay. All right. Why don't you cover us some feedback here?
Yes. So feedback from Dyer Snyder 5406. I recognize that name. How you doing? If Brian G sounds like Brian K on the phone, and Brian K sounds like his dad on the phone, can Brian G stand in for Brian K's dad on the phone? That's so meta. That is so meta. And I would
you
venture,
said that when we did our interview that you said that you sound like your dad on the phone.
Yeah.
Wait, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I also, when people get me on the phone here, which we don't have a handset on, when they get me on the phone here, they go, oh, are you Brian Goulet? No. I'm a Brian, though. But apparently I sound just like him. But yes, I would venture that if Brian Goulet and my father were at my parents' house and my mother called to ask what we're having for dinner and Brian Goulet answered, she would be like, she would be confused for a second. And then what would really give it away is that he would probably actually give an answer. My dad usually just goes, oh, or
So we need to coach him a little bit to do a proper impersonation.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be interesting.
Nice.
Let's see. So next up from Shazza Girl 9803. Hi, Brian and Drew. I found the interview with Brian K really interesting. When you have him on again, I would love a show and tell segment to see some of his leather work and knives. How cool.
Do you have any?
I do have it now. Do we want to, we could roll some of it into.
Yeah, let me, I'll take a little, I can take a little video and we can put it up so people can see.
Yeah.
What you got with you?
What you got? This is also a stack of pens.
Oh, okay. Is that leather and knife together?
Yeah. So they do go hand in hand. Put these back down here. So we've got one of the last knives that I made.
You made that knife?
I did.
Okay. Yeah. Bring it over here so I can stay in my mic.
Made that knife.
So you like pounded out the metal and everything.
No, this is stock removal. So I started with a flat square piece and then cut out the shape and ground the bevels.
Oh, okay.
And same deal with this guy. And you can see the difference there.
And you made that handle too?
Yeah, this one's rosewood, and this one is micarta of some kind. Red and white there. It'll polish up nicely, but
oh wow,
you should feel those both.
Dude, you cannot feel these. What are they, standoffs, or what do you call these things?
Those are just pins.
Pins, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that's wild.
That one turned out nice. It looks more like a steak knife than I would have wanted.
That's fine. Steak knives look cool.
Or like a parry knife.
I love this little edge here.
Yeah, it's to lock your
pinky in. It's really comfortable. Dang. And Brian knows all sorts about steel too, and like different types of steel. He knows like way more than he should about different steels. Is this a little, is that Schmutz or some sort of logo there?
That is Schmutz.
That's Schmutz. Okay. Because it's where the logo sometimes is up there. Yeah.
That type of carbon steel takes a patina very quickly.
Ah.
So that is just.
Oh, you did a little
stuff.
Hole too.
Yep. Little lanyard hole. Cool. And then we've got the sheath for it.
And you made this too.
Yep. I'm going to put a little dangler on it, little ring, so it can pivot back and forth on my belt.
That is fun. You have to have special thread for this, right?
Yeah. That is, traditionally it would be sinew thread, but you can get natural or synthetic thread.
Is it waxed?
Yes. Okay. Well, you can buy it waxed or unwaxed, but you want it waxed because it slides through the holes better.
Ah. That looks so cool.
Yeah. And then just
looks well used
back.
Too.
Yeah. I carried that one around for a while. It's a nice little knife.
So you have to pin this in before you sew it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you rivet it or sew it, you have to do that step first.
I guess if you didn't, you could like put something inside to then pound it?
Yeah, you could. A lot of people will sew. If you sew them instead, you have to do it first. But if you do the rivet, you could put, you know, a piece of steel in there and then pound it in, but getting the rivet in there,
that is really
through
cool.
The hole, because you have to, it's a two-piece rivet.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to put the post in and then the cap on, squeeze it together, and then whack, whack, whack with a hammer.
Have you done more sheaths or more wallets?
I've actually done quite a few wallets.
Yeah. I know that
wallet.
You've done quite a few wallets.
Yeah. I sold more wallets than anything else. Because I would give people a nice friend discount.
Yeah. So. And you've even done notebook covers, correct?
Yeah, I did an A5 notebook cover for one of our coworkers, Jeremy. And I traded that. He ground a nib for me. I made his notebook cover. I pretty much did an exact Traveler's Company.
Yeah.
You know, Traveler's style notebook. It turned out really nice. I dyed it red. It's one of the first times I used red dye. And whoo, it came out like crimson and beautiful.
And you haven't been tempted to do one for yourself yet?
I have. I don't have enough. Well, I've got just barely enough leather to do one. I'm trying to figure out if I want to do A5 or if I want to do a traveler style, because I've never actually used a traveler style notebook.
I prefer A5, but of course it doesn't travel as well.
Yeah. And the traveler, I never realized that the traveler's insert is the same height as an A5.
Oh.
But it's like, you know, the 2 inches shorter on the width.
So you just take an A5 and chop it in half.
Yeah. Or you could, well, my plan would be to use the Traveler's landscape and write in it that way.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because you get the width.
Yeah.
You know, then the height is made up for.
I actually don't dislike that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Well, there you go.
Shazza Girl 9803. Thank you very much. Let's see. Next up, we've got, hello, it's Jordan. Brian K. helped me the other day, and he was awesome.
Good job.
Cool to get to meet him here.
There you go.
Nice to meet you too. I'm glad I could help you, and I'm glad I was awesome. If I wasn't, that would be bad.
Yeah, so you, if you want Brian to help you, just roll the dice and give us a call or shoot us an email. And you might get lucky. You're going to get lucky either way because the whole team is fantastic. But
that's true.
Brian's in the trenches getting stuff done every day.
Oh, yeah, all the time. And let's see. Thank you, Jordan. Left-handed clogger. Not me perking up when Brian K. mentioned Jim Hines of Hines Pens. Smiley face. Jim is a member of my local pen club, and I've been able to meet him on several occasions, and I was 100% able to picture exactly how he said it. I admire your nib hacking capabilities. Yeah, Jim was cool. Nice guy. I want to talk to him some more at the next show at some point.
Yeah.
He seems like an interesting fellow.
He certainly is, yeah. He and... Yeah, they got a good team with him as well. All right, well, that does it for our feedback. We're going to move on to a hefty dose of new stuff.
New stuff.
All right, what we're going to do is, I don't know if you noticed this, but I gave you all the pens, and then I'm going to tackle all the inks.
Okay.
There's no really rhyme or reason to it, but we've got a ton of both, so we're going to just kick things off with a bunch of new pens that Brian is going to make us aware of.
Yeah, so first off the bat, we've got the Visconti Galileo Galilei. Yeah, limited edition. Do we usually go over price on these?
Yeah.
Okay, so a cool $4,796 for the Galileo Galilei. And it is gorgeous. Comes with a really neat stand, lots of intricate carving, you know, classic, super high-end Visconti.
Yeah.
Yeah, it rings a bell, a very specific bell for a certain person. And that's usually how these pens go.
Absolutely.
Like, there's one person out there that will be like...
Oh, 100%. Have you had the opportunity to operate the power filler on this pen?
No, but I heard you say it's got the hook and loop hook safe.
Not exactly. It's more or less just a channel lock.
So
it is a standard power fill, but it is a twist and lock power fill. So you unlock it from the channel, raise it up, and then push it down, and then lock it again. So it's just a single like quarter turn. But it doesn't really come out of its channel. So it's not like a hook safe where it comes all the way out.
Is that what we're looking at here?
No. They don't actually show it. It's a steel. It's a kind of like a steel shroud or aluminum shroud that has the channel. Kind of like a Curados or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I wonder if they're going to pull that and do it on anything else. Because it's a cool concept to have.
It is really cool.
Instead of, you know, traditional concentric threads on it.
Now, it's probably a little bit more complicated for cleaning over and over again. Like, you know, you have to pump a vac, you know, several times to get all the stuff out. So it might be a little bit more inconvenient for that, but it's something I had not seen Visconti do or any company do before. So yeah, it's fascinating. It's not just a visual thing. It does have some unique mechanical features as well.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous looking pen. And the stand is really neat too. It's the whole package. Let's see. Next up, we've got the Kaweco Sport Fountain Pen Apricot Pearl Limited Production for $30. That's the usual price for the special edition.
Now, I haven't seen one of these in person. Have you?
Yeah.
You
did?
It's
good. Yeah.
Does it have a pearlescence to it?
It does.
Cool.
And it looks really nice. If you guys like the iridescent pearl, this limited from, what was that, last year? 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think it's still around, but yeah.
Yeah, we still got a few floating around, but it's kind of the same deal. A little bit of chatoyance, sparkle, magic in the resin, but it is translucent and it's got that color. I just love that color.
It's a really unique color. Yeah. I'm a big fan. I mean, I'd like to see it in person because that's when you can kind of rotate it and see its pearlescence. But that's cool to know that it does have it. I was hoping it would.
Yeah. I actually like that one. I usually don't buy a lot of sports, but I think I'm going to get that one.
Yeah.
And next up from Twisby, of course, we've got the Eco in Dark Sapphire, which is a lovely dark blue.
So it looks a little purpley.
It does look a little purpley, doesn't it? Yeah.
Just a hint.
It's
like so royal, it's almost purple.
It does scream sapphire to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a good ringer for sapphire.
I would agree. And yeah, normal price on those, $32.99 for your special edition Twisby, which is... great, especially if you collect them all, you'll have a dark sapphire in your lineup now. And then, what else? We've got the Sailor Princess Rodden collection, all four of them. Yeah, so they've all got Mother of Pearl, Yubi Makie on the outside.
And that's kind of like another word for, you know, platinum sometimes calls it modern Makie. It's like, it's Makie-ish. It's not like somebody sitting there and painting something on in the way you would with the higher price Makie. Obviously, the price should be an indicator of how much handwork is actually done to the pen. So just kind of understand that.
Yeah, the rodden bits are done by hand, but some of the overlay work is an overlay instead of being hand painted. Yeah. But they are finished really nicely. I got to see all of these while Glenn was doing the photos, and he was having a really fun time trying to get the caps and the bodies to do their thing for that.
Yeah, because like the design is on one side of the cap, but a different side of the body that's not really aligned with the nib per se. So you can't really show the nib and the design at the same time. But
yeah.
He got it done. There's some beautiful pictures online if you want to look at them.
Yeah, and we've got four different colors with various animals, designs, and flora on them. So different flowers, different shapes, different colors. There's four of them. They all look really good. I am a big fan of the koi fish one, which is the... That's not that one. Nope. It's the Shirotai. Yeah. It's got a lavenderish cap with some purple flowers on it, and then a ivory cream body with the cute little koi fish on it.
Yeah, they really go really well together. And like Sailor does, they're all really unique color combinations that you don't think would work, but they do.
They do. They all look really good. And those are coming in at $312 a piece, which is a good price for the work and the overall layout of the pen. I like it.
Yeah. And those are the Pruger Slims.
Yes, these are all Slims.
Cool. All right, well, there you have it for the pens. As far as the inks go, we've got quite a few. We've got two new inks from Waringal. One of them is the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea ink. That is a nice kind of ocean blue, watery blue with gold shimmer. And I tell you what, when I did the swab for this one, I had to write Waringal 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea on that little tiny card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard.
Wasn't looking forward to that, but I managed. It was a... You know, the word to swab ratio was a little different than I try to get, but, you know, it is what it is. That is a 30 mil bottle coming in at $22. Also at $22 is Waringal Persephone, and that is a really sharp ink. It is purple with red shimmer.
Yeah.
Really cool. It's, if you liked Waringal's Frankenstein, this is a little different. It's a little more toned down, but not much. It's a different sort of sheen and a slightly different shade of purple, but still beautiful. And actually writing Persephone is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's a good, you know, you got the P dropping down, the H coming up. I like that. I like it when we've got like different heights in words. Culliver's came out with an entire collection. So it's been a while since they've done that. I think the last collection they had was the Hubble collection. Season 7?
Yes.
So this is Season 8. It is known as the Grand Expedition, and all of these colors are more or less concentrated around Jupiter, its moons, and things that happen around the, you know, our biggest neighboring planet here. So they are all going to be those two packs of bottles. So one 65 milliliter bottle and then one smaller 13. So it is $38 per unit, but you are getting two bottles of ink, one very large bottle. So 65 mil is, I think, the largest
that they
bottle
do
that we have here. Like, can you think of a bottle that's more than 65 mil?
100 mil Jerobon.
Oh, those plastic ones. Yeah. I forgot about those. We still have those?
I think
like
so.
Like the ones that look like jugs?
Pearl Noir.
Yeah. Oh, wow, yeah.
Oh, a great note about the, if you're not familiar with Colorverse, their packaging is amazing.
So much fun.
So if you're a fan of like that kind of really polished, you know, you get out of the box and you look at it and you're like, ooh, can't wait to open this. Colorverse is the right brand for you.
It's a whole presentation. It comes with stickers, a little napkin, little instructions about the meaning behind the inks and everything like that, the inspiration. So I'm not going to go over all of them. There are 6 different sets. I could read them all, but without describing the colors to you, they're going to be meaningless. So I'll put up some images. You can check out the colors, find out what speaks to you, and learn more about them.
Which is the hardest one to pronounce?
Let's see. I don't... I probably... Sidereus Nuncius. I don't really...
And heliocentrism. Lots of Latin words in here.
Yeah. I did find out that... it is bow shock, not bow shock.
Bow shock.
Yeah, so it's bow shock.
So for boat.
Yes, it's actually a term when an object is passing through another object. There is a, like, because it's not really passing through it, it's kind of condensing it as it's traveling, and then that condensing creates an explosion of some kind, which is known as a bow shock. And it does come from the point in which the bow of a ship breaks through waves and compresses the energy there.
That's interesting.
That's a very, very general, quite ignorant thing that I spent 2 seconds on the internet researching just because I wanted to know if it was bow or bow. But there you go. Also, ink-wise, we're looking at Ferris Wheel Press's Unfettered Flight. So that's a 20ml bottle of ink. It is light blue with duochrome pink and gold shimmer. Unfettered Flight.
Unfettered.
And flight. I don't know if you know about this, but there was an ink that Lamy put out called Dark Lilac. It's like a purple or something. You can get that for $12 if you want to. So there you go.
It is purple.
All right, we're going to jump into some company updates real quick before we get into Q&A. So here we go. Brian Goulet created a video on the aforementioned Dark Lilac ink, which, you know, I had a tongue-in-cheek moment there. It was a very big deal last week. Yeah. Lamy Dark Lilac was an ink that shook the core of the fountain pen planet back in 2016, I believe.
Yep.
And we immediately sold out. It broke our website at the time because of its popularity, and they didn't make enough. So it kind of, you know, for years sat in this grail territory, you know, it was obscenely high eBay prices and things like that. Lamy brought it back, and Lamy was not fully aware of just how sought after it was. So once news got out that it returned, it shook things up considerably. Not to mention the fact that in the same week, Lamy announced that they were being purchased. So last week was a crazy, crazy week. Brian sat down after he gathered all of the facts. He didn't want to produce anything without having some solid, concrete evidence to provide you with. So he bided his time, got together as much facts as possible, talked to Lamy directly, and then made a video really wrapping up the whole thing. So you can go check that out. That is available on YouTube. So I'll link to it here as well as in the description below. So if you have questions about the Lamy Dark Lilac situation, they will be answered hopefully in that video. And then you wanted to mention something else as well.
Yeah, we are actually totally phased out of using bubble wrap in our packages.
I did not know that. I thought we still used it like kind of sparingly, but...
So I did ask Adam for some clarity on this, and Adam would love to come and talk to the viewers, everyone.
He's on my list of next Meet the Team people.
Oh, good. So, yeah, Adam will definitely give you guys some more information. But in short, we don't have a plastic bubble wrap machine anymore.
How
no more
that?
Sealed air. So we are totally on with the paper, which you guys have probably noticed if you've been shopping with us for more than 2 years, that the bubble wrap went away. The crumpled paper has arrived, and yeah, so that is a huge win for sustainability and recyclability of everything.
Yeah,
so,
because I believe the paper is also made from recycled materials.
We've got the paper is totally recycled. Then we've got like 80% of our packages go out in 100% post-consumer recycled boxes.
Yeah,
so very very little fresh resource going into our packaging.
And very, 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 very few things arrive damaged or broken because our team is so, so focused on safety. And that's great. So that's awesome to hear.
Yeah.
Thank you for mentioning that. I don't think we had covered that previously. All right. Well, now, people and other people, we're going to get into our Q&A segment, the meat and the proverbial potatoes of this show. And that starts right now. Brian.
Drew?
You're going to kick us off with question number one.
I'm going to kick us off.
It's going to be a fun one. I'm going to get ready.
Morgan says, can you recommend the best smelling inks? Ones that actually smell like what they say they are supposed to smell like. Thank you. That is very good, Morgan, that you put that qualifier there because I would have brought a bunch of inks in that do not smell like what they're supposed to smell like. Number one, if you have it at home or if you ever get a sample, Twisby Blue Black.
That smells weird.
It smells like a mix of a fresh shower curtain liner and my grandmother's basement.
Okay, well, I've definitely smelled your grandmother's basement. I haven't come in contact with a fresh shower curtain liner, though, so I'll have to check that out.
What do you put in your shower?
I was just joking. I haven't actually smelled your grandmother's basement.
I haven't smelled it in many years either. I don't even think the house is still there. Anyway, so yes, we've got some inks to smell.
We do. I don't have a olfactory cleanser, so if we were really serious, we would sniff some coffee. Yeah, there you go. I've got a couple Diatramentis, because right now Diatramentis does have the most scented inks of any other brand. So I've got several of those. And I've got two dye mine from last year's, not last year, before last's, year before last, the purple edition of the Inkvent calendar. Mm. And then I have one that I did not know was scented, Brian. This is Jacques Urban Noir Inspiration.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, oh goodness, don't tell me.
You might need to pull it up on here, because it's supposed to smell like wooden cigars or something like that.
That's what it is.
So we're gonna experiment. So let's tackle Diatomaceous first with Cherry, which I believe is the most popular of the four that we're going to be checking out. So here we go. Cherry by Diatomaceous. Oh, that's fantastic. See, I think that smells like cherry. That smells like, well, it's like very fake cherry, like cherry candy or something. Right?
It smells like cough medicine to me.
Right, okay. But like cough medicines taste like fake cherry.
Oh,
right?
Man. I almost like, I feel like I should just
drink it. Douse, don't do it. Like, don't do
send it.
It
back. Don't do it. it smells like cherry.
Yeah.
It doesn't smell bad.
Kind of like Luden's cough drops, right?
Yeah, I've got some sort of like flashback going right now.
See, I'm not mad at this at all. I think it smells good.
No, it does smell good. It doesn't have that medicinal tinge at the end of it.
Just a hint, but not too much. That, okay, I will say.
It smells like what it's supposed to
smell if like. You bought a cherry scented ink and sniffed this, I don't think you're going to be disappointed.
Agreed.
All right. Apple Blossom. See, here's one that I just don't have an expectation for. Like, what the heck does an apple blossom smell like? What flowers. Should it smell like? I don't care for that. It's not terrible, but a lot of these that I have smelled tend to really go hard on the perfumey smell. Cherry is not one of them. Cherry actually smells a little bit more like candy, a little sugary. This one approaches the perfumey category for
me. It is very floral, floral, soft.
It is soft. It's not nearly as strong as the cherry.
And it's not as sweet smelling either.
It's fine. I really don't think that it's strong enough to last on the page though.
No, and very few of them, well, we don't really test it. So like not a lot of us use scented inks, and the best feedback we get is from customers about this one still smells after 6 months in my book. And there's so many factors to that. But yeah, they're fun to use. I like the idea of writing with it, and you're like, it smells like cherries as I'm writing. That's the experience.
So it's more for your experience than the recipient or the, later recalling the letter.
Definitely.
All right, Diatomaceous Black Roses. So I'm just expecting this to smell like rose, but the color is probably darker, so they called it Black Roses. I don't know how I feel about that one. It definitely is floral.
That's definitely rose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this smells like I just splashed my face with rose water.
Okay. Yeah. So not bad.
It's definitely rose. Yeah. And to those out there, it does smell more like rose water to me than a fresh rose.
Okay.
There is a...
I've never smelled rose water.
Oh, it's lovely.
Really? What do you use it for?
You spray it on your face.
Oh.
And smell good. And it's good. Yeah, it just feels nice.
Okay. Yeah. I like this one better than Apple Blossom.
Yeah.
So far, which was your favorite?
Not the cherry.
Not the cherry. Cherry's definitely my favorite.
I think I like Apple Blossom. Okay. It was a little more subtle.
All right. We're going to finish things off with the Diatomaceous Quadrilogy with Lavender. Oh. Okay. That is, I think, just as potent as cherry. It's definitely more punchy than the other two florally ones.
And this one hits... Definitely like essential oil lavender.
Yes.
More so than lavender off the plant. Though I've got like three lavender plants that we put in the front of the house. And during the right time of year, you just walk by and you touch your hand on it and then you...
Dang. I planted one lavender last year and it never bloomed.
They are surprisingly...
I think something was eating it.
Oh.
I don't know.
My neighbor comes by and cuts pieces off when I'm not
there. Maybe it was your neighbor.
Yeah.
Dang it. I should have guessed. All right, so cherry, apple blossom, black roses, lavender. How do you score these? Like, so Morgan's asking ones that actually smell like they're supposed to. Would you say that these do that?
Yes, for all the Diatomaceous ones, I would definitely say so. The floral notes of the rose and the apple, one could say like, oh, it doesn't smell like an apple blossom. Yeah, it's close enough to, it smells a little apple-y. This one smells rosy.
Yeah. I would say that if you got any of these four just reading the name, I don't think you're going to be disappointed in the actual smell.
Yeah, so I would agree.
All right, let's move on to Diamine. So these were the two scented inks that came in their purple edition Inkvent calendar of 2022. We will be eventually getting the ones from the,
what color was green? It this year? Green? It was green.
Green. I think there might be a few scented inks in there as well. I don't think they were very holiday-y. Here we've got Spruce and Pick Me Up. Spruce is obviously supposed to smell like a pine tree. Pick Me Up is supposed to smell like coffee. I have smelled these before. I already have some opinions, but I'm going to refresh my opinions on these. Okay. You know what? I disliked Spruce at first quite a bit. That does not smell too bad to me. Maybe the one I had turned. I'm not sure, but that actually smells pretty pleasant. It's not Yankee Candle Spruce, but it is Pine Tree Air Freshener Spruce.
Yeah, it's teetering on the edge of Pine Sol.
Yeah, it's a little chemically.
Yeah, but it is sweeter than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's not as sharp as Pine Sol or like a, you know, taxi cab air freshener.
Yeah, it definitely reminds me of walking into a Christmas shop.
Yeah. So definitely artificial, but not like unbearable artificial.
Yeah, it's kind of like
gas station artificial, you know? Like, you know, not straight up chemical, but definitely.
It's good.
Yeah, I'm not mad at Spruce. Now, I do like Pick Me Up, or at least I did. We'll see if it.
I have not smelled this one.
Yeah. All right, so this is supposed to be a little coffee-y.
Coffee-y.
Oh. I'm not getting coffee anymore. I'm getting more malt or cigar, actually. It's like a smoky malt to me.
Yeah, it does not ring coffee to me.
No, I thought it did. The first time I smelled it, I thought it was coffee-ish.
Yeah, definitely. It's got a roasty kind of plasticine. Yeah, kind of like slightly synthetic roasted cooked flavor.
Okay, see, I'm getting a little coffee now.
Yeah, that's a tough one. It doesn't smell like
I'm getting a little chocolatey coffee.
Yeah, it's definitely chocolatey.
Okay,
yeah, like the sweetness of the cocoa. Yeah, at the top. Yeah,
interesting.
I love smelling candles. That's Catherine and I, whenever we go to the store, we gotta smell like 80 million candles. Yeah, lots of candles, lots of perfume. She loves to smell perfume. So now I love to smell perfume too.
I basically just want the same candles over and over again. I will have a pine candle all year round.
Love a good pine candle.
Like, I do not care. I want that, and I want like a sweet vanilla.
You should get the Sterling candle.
Like cookie. You know, I'm just a sucker for like cookie scents and pine, like all year round. Or pumpkin. I'm always fine with pumpkin. I don't even care about the time of the year.
Yeah.
All right, so Spruce and Diamine, the representatives from, sorry, Spruce and Pick Me Up, the representatives from Diamine. Do you feel like if someone bought these, they would think that these don't smell like the thing?
That's a 50-50 for those two in particular. Spruce, yes. Pick Me Up, someone could be like, nah, it doesn't smell like my coffee, because a lot of these are very subjective too. Yeah. The smell of coffee, especially.
Yeah.
Like Spruce, Rose, Lavender, those are smells that exist and are known. What does your coffee smell like? Our two coffees probably smell different.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I think Spruce is accurate. I think Pick Me Up is pretty variable. I don't get the coffee scent as much. I get other scents. So if you've got a very chocolatey, you know, smoky coffee, then
yeah,
you might be very, very happy with
that. I'll do it.
All right, so Noir Inspiration. Could you pull up that? Because I wanted to know what exactly they say this is supposed to smell like, because I did not know. This is the only Jacques Herbon scented ink that we have, and I did not know that this was scented up until just now. So,
let's see. Noir Inspiration.
Noir Inspiration and takes us on a nocturnal olfactory stroll evoking woody scents smoked with round tobacco. And a subtle union of moss and velvetier.
Vetiver.
Oh, there's no eye there.
It sounds like
I just assumed it was French.
Are looking at descriptions of soap scents.
Yeah, there's so much going on here.
Yeah.
And why does it need to be round tobacco?
Well, the smell is round, not the tobacco.
The smell is round. The shape of the smell.
Yeah, like what if you smell something, sometimes if it's like really acrid, it smells like pokey.
Oh, okay. So this basically just not sharp. Not a sharp smell.
Yeah, it I've should be okay. balanced.
Okay.
Ooh.
I don't hate that. I don't know what I'm getting, but it's. I guess it smells like cologne almost. Like.
Oh yeah. Definitely get the tobacco note. Woody, yes. The vetiver is a lot of that woody smell. The moss could be from a couple different things because you can get that. Like oak moss mm-hmm. is used in scenting a lot, but real oak moss is like really expensive.
Mm.
Yeah. I love this.
I know. I like it too.
It's a very, I would say, a traditionally masculine scent.
Yeah.
But what I do find is that those like really traditional masculine scents all have like a lot of floral notes in mm-hmm. them and, you know, really traditional good smells. Yeah, that's really nice. It smells like a soap that I've got. It smells like Executive Man.
Yeah.
It's good.
I think that... No. Brian also turned me on to fancy soaps because he's terrible. So we now order our soaps from Sterling Soap Company. I think I'm using Sharp Dress Man right now.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think I've tried Executive yet.
I've got some samples for you because they've got the whole
thing. Send you a sample every time.
Yeah,
so.
they'll send you a sample, which is really cool.
I did that when we went to Disney. I just brought, because I could leave it at the hotel. We need to travel with soap. I just brought a sample with me from Sterling.
Idea.
It was already wrapped up. So I'm like, all right, great. Just left it at the hotel.
Yeah, I keep them in tins, in little tins, and I put the labels on them. So I've got like a bajillion soap samples now.
There we go.
Things I don't know.
All right. Well, Morgan, that was your travel down the olfactory
lane.
I don't know. Hopefully that was helpful. Got a question for you, Brian. Arlie Moses asks, what is Ultem and why is it such a big deal? In my honest opinion, it isn't overly attractive. That's not me. That's Arlie. So I know that you are a material man. You know quite a bit about rare materials, both in terms of fountain pen manufacturing and knife handles and stuff like that. So I figured you'd be a good guy to provide us some insight on this one.
Yeah, Ultem is interesting stuff for some, I suppose. It is poly, and I had to write this one down because I couldn't remember, polyetheramide. So what I know it as, you know it as Ultem, which is your brand name. Like Kleenex, Band-Aid, Ultem. Mm-hmm. And the material is usually abbreviated PEI for polyetheramide. So traditionally, it's used in super heat-resistant uses. So if you're using an autoclave to sterilize your medical instruments, you have a little tray.
What's an autoclave?
An autoclave is a machine used to heat sterilize medical instruments or tattoo, which are medical instruments, tattoo gun parts.
Great.
So you put them on this little Ultem tray, they go on the autoclave, and that's Ultem's big deal, is that it's super heat resistant, so it can go into those various places.
So do they make medical equipment out of it?
Some medical equipment. So I did a little bit of research on Ultem that I did not know. Yeah, it turns out we have a dive. Not super deep. Ultem can also be glass-filled. So like glass-filled nylon.
Well, like fiberglass, like impregnated with
for strength. And that's where pure Ultem with no glass fill is weak. It is literally weak. So if you have really thin pieces with screw holes in it, in the knife community, we see a lot of handle scales, which are the handles. If there are two pieces bolted on, screw holes are breaking on some Ultem stuff. But what is the big deal? It's cool. It's an interesting material. It's got some odd coloration to it for those fans of
yellow, mustardy.
It's an oddly organic color.
Yeah. So that's what that's the natural Ultem color.
Yeah.
And you can color it because I've seen Ian Schoen. I think he has black Ultem.
I wouldn't be surprised. I did not. Because I thought his black pen was Peak or Torlon.
Oh, God. It's not Torlon.
Not Torlon.
I thought it was black Ultem. I know. We'll figure that out later.
Yeah. Anyway,
but that people do make fountain pens out of Ultem.
Yeah. This is one that came all the way from China on the slow boat. The pen was inexpensive. It's got a titanium clip and Ultem body. It's okay, but I wanted an example of Ultem for my collection because I'm not going to put it on any of my knives because I don't love clear handles on my knives, but yeah, it's got a pretty storied history. It's been in use in other things outside of, you know, just autoclave bits for a long time. And I remember I was actually looking at it this morning, so I was like, where have I seen Ultim? And it turns out Ontario Knife Company made a kitchen knife with an Ultim handle. And they came, it's been so long that they have now discontinued the knife. And the biggest reason why I think they put that Ultim handle on there is because it would go in the dishwasher and be heat resistant.
Oh.
Because it, you know, if you put it something like that in the drying cycle on your dishwasher, it's not going to have an issue at all.
Okay, so he does do, he's got natural Ultim, black smoltum, and also peak. So he calls it black Ultim, but I don't know if maybe that has something else going on to it. But yeah, we're just focusing on the natural Ultim for this, for the sake of this question.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Oh, in the, at least in the pen realm, the first time I ever saw it was on Kasama pens.
Uh-huh. That's the only place I've ever seen a Torlon.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Which I fell in love with.
Yeah, the Torlons need stuff. I like the Delrin.
Delrin's cool.
Delrin's neat because it's a self-lubricating plastic.
It's really, really light, though.
Yeah.
And it feels really soft.
Mm-hmm.
I've never held a Torlon pen, but I feel like it's a heavier than...
I don't know.
It's weird because every application I've seen it in outside of pens, there are all these like large kind of like wheels and like
bearing, you know, surfaces. Bearing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's hard to gauge how heavy a hollowed out version of it would be, mm-hmm. you know, in the form of a pen body.
Yeah, it is an odd material, especially like the new engineered plastics are kind of, I feel like they go a little like, they come and go like a little fad kind mm-hmm. of. I don't think the Ultim will be like a big, like it'll hit the industry mainstream. You're not going to see probably like a Lamy Ultim pen mm-hmm. or a Pilot Ultim pen. So it'll probably be squarely in the realm of the smaller makers, which that alone makes it cool to me.
Yeah. And I like the fact that the smaller makers can have something unique to offer the industry. And I think that the fact that they're agile and they can use these kind of materials that larger companies, you know, can't do, you know, keeps them competitive. And I think peak is, you know, to deviate a little bit, I think peak is some sort of antimicrobial, has like some antimicrobial component to it.
That would be cool.
I don't really, I'm out of my zone here, so we won't get too far into that. We already went too far last week about talking about metal threads and how things react to metals, and I don't want to jump too much onto the ignorance train.
I love conversations like that.
I know, but we do a thing where we just start... you know, talking about how we don't know anything and it's not helpful for anybody.
Well, so, then you get all the people that do know stuff in the comments.
Yeah, but it's also got to be exhausting for some people just to listen to us talk about how little we know. So we won't, I don't want to go too far into that because we are authentic though. We won't, you know, ever pretend to be experts in anything. If we're confident in something, you will hear that. We'll convey that. This is not one of those things for me anyway.
No.
Cool.
Let's see. So next up from Nin, N-I-N, Nin, that's right. How common are counterfeit pens in the pen world? I get really nervous when I look at websites other than yours or brick and mortar stores for fear of buying something fake. Is there a reliable source to verify authorized dealers? Thanks.
The short answer is like, no, there's not a really easy way to verify authorized dealers. I think that, you know, what you said, brick and mortar stores and our website, I can say that you're generally in a safe zone. In the U.S. at least, which is obviously the part of the industry I feel confident enough to speak to, I don't think that there is a big problem with legit counterfeit pens in the United States. As far as if you're buying from a online or brick and mortar retailer selling like a Lamy 2000, it's probably a Lamy 2000. I think that if you like, I've gone into, you know, some bargain stores here and there, and I've seen things that look a lot like Lamy Safaris.
Yeah.
That, but they're not purporting to be Lamy Safaris. They're just like fountain pen calligraphy set.
Yeah.
So they're obviously trying to, you know, copy the mold, but they're not. For the sake of this question, we're talking counterfeit pens, a pen that's trying to be a pen that it's not.
Mm.
So in the U.S., that's not a huge deal. However, you know, we are in a global, you know, global retail situation. So You can be in the U.S. and order from anywhere. Things do get a little tricky with Amazon. I think it's less of a problem than it used to be, but depending on, I don't know exactly how Amazon is currently working it, but there was at least a time where commingling their stock was a possibility. Meaning if I wanted to sell something through Amazon, I would ship them my product and then they would keep it at their warehouse with other products from a different person who might be providing Amazon with counterfeit products. So you do run the risk when you buy from a company like that, that commingles their stock. Even if I, Drew Brown, am selling good, legit stuff, Brian K is sending his stuff to Amazon as well, and he's just making it out of, you know, marshmallows and shoe polish. It's just
boxes full of rocks.
Yeah, exactly. So you might buy it from me, but you might want to get one of Brian's boxes of rocks. Mm-hmm. So that's a thing. I've heard less about it. I think that it was more of an issue years ago, but I don't know. It's still a possibility because you don't really you yourself or the the retailer in this case isn't actually sending out the product. Amazon is sending it on their behalf.
Yeah.
So there's variables there.
I haven't heard too much about it on the fountain pen front recently because it used to be a lot of Lamy.
Yeah.
That we would see, like, oh, I got this from,
especially Safaris.
Yeah, I got this Safari for $15 off Amazon, and you look at it and it's all wrong and the nib doesn't even have Lamy on it and it takes a standard international converter.
Yep.
And you're like, what's going on here? Turns out it's a fake. Yep. Yeah, we don't really see it as much anymore. And I think part of that is because a lot of the people who used to make those fakes are now making different pens.
Yeah. Different fakes.
different fakes or pens of their own, or that is not nearly as profitable as making a different pen and charging more money for it.
Honestly, like, they've actually got some pretty convincing Lamy 2000s these days.
You've seen a 2000 fake?
Uh-huh.
I've never seen one. I've seen one of the one brand.
Yeah, not the one one that's actually claimed to be 2000. Yeah, I'm fairly certain. I'm doubting myself, but
I have never seen a 2000 because I would buy one. there's a Dialogue. I've seen the Dialogue.
Yeah, I've seen a Dialogue.
And that is a blatant copy. The VPs are not directly branded.
Yeah, I've seen those.
So those copies are not branded. Straight up fakes. I can roll into my part.
Well, let me finish off by saying that there do exist some gray market retailers as far as your ability to spot an authorized retailer. Now, granted, buying from a not authorized retailer doesn't mean you're going to receive counterfeits, but you're not guaranteed that. You know, the only way to guarantee authenticity is by buying from an authorized retailer. There is not one easy way to find out if the place you're shopping at is an authorized retailer for all of their brands. We have it in our FAQ section. If you go and visit our website, it's a FAQ that says, like, hey, are you an authorized seller for all your, you know, pens? And we say, yes, we are. So you could do that if that particular retailer chooses to put that in their FAQs. If not, you could ask them. You could ask the manufacturer or the distributor in your country. That would be the most foolproof way. But it gets tricky because there might be a company like, you know, say, Benu that does authorize, you know, drewspens.com to sell their stock, but also drewspens.com might be selling Pilot as well without the permission of Pilot. So it's kind of tricky to determine whether or not, because, you know, drewspens.com is actually buying Pilot pens from brianspens.com and just selling them on my website. So that's called gray market. And, you know, it gets tricky because sometimes all they sell are gray market stuff. Sometimes they're a little bit of both. They are authorized over here, but they're not authorized over there. And there's really no way for you to be able to tell unless you ask the U.S. distributor for that brand. So if you want to know for sure, Pilot USA, they will respond to you via email just fine.
Yep.
You know, you've got, you know, if you can locate the distributor for that brand in your country, they should be able to give you a straight yes or no there.
Yeah. And that rolls directly in. Like, you go to the distributor, and this is a good example. Like, for us, if you come to us and you need a Pilot warranty issue on your pen that's 2 years old, we'll send you to Pilot USA. And if you look at some other websites, it'll skip Pilot USA and it says from this US-based website, they send you directly to Pilot Japan. That means that they are not a authorized dealer through the US distribution, but they are through the Japanese distribution. And that's the gray market. And that's where it gets really funny. But a lot of the distribution or at least the manufacturer's websites, do have dealer locators. So you can go find retailer dealer
locators. That's a good
locators.
Point, yep.
And, but sometimes you're looking at, like, you know, it's got to go through a distributor first. So, like, we don't buy stuff directly from Visconti, Italy. We go through Kohl's of London in North Carolina. And if you go through their website, you'll find all of our information there, too. But yeah, ask your retailer if they're an authorized dealer, too. That's something that they should wear as a mild point of pride if they're, you know, if they're getting it from the right place. But yeah, beside that, the odds of getting a fake from any of, like, the legit fountain pen websites, you know, all of our contemporaries, us, well, you're not going to get anything fake from us because that doesn't even enter our stream, but it's extremely low. Like, you're looking at eBay, Etsy, Amazon, like the places where Joe Schmo can sell Brian's pens that are actually boxes of rocks. That's where you're going to see this stuff. And maybe at, like, some random brick and mortar stores. And that's a tricky thing, too.
Cause maybe. Not of their stationary stores, though.
No, like, if you go into, like, a flea market and you see a bunch of pens or, you know, garage sale, or not even garage sale, like some sort of off-the-beaten-path kind of thing.
Like, if you tasked us with finding and buying some counterfeit safaris, it would be way harder to do that than it would be for us to, you know, buy some real ones. So they're quite uncommon.
Yeah, and it's not... Like, it may seem like a lot of pens, but it's not really. And it's actually very little of what we even carry.
Yeah, when we've encountered them, it's been, like, a fascinating thing. You're like, oh, come over here. Look at this picture this customer sent me. Look, it's a fake Lamy. Like, oh, my God. And, you know, it's a pretty rare occurrence. We get to actually kind of analyze those. So it definitely doesn't happen often enough for us to be super knowledgeable about it. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, it is. Overall, they're probably harder to run into. Yeah, they're hard to find.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a question for you from Bridget. And Bridget says, I love inks that write very wet, and I wish I could search the website for inks by wetness. I appreciate that the technical specs of the inks show the flowability of each ink, but I wish you had a short list of inks that have very good flow, a variety of colors, so that I do not have to go and look at the technical specs of over 800 inks you have on the website. Love the PenCast. We get this question a lot, and I don't expect you to have an answer for it because there is no answer for it. And generally, I skip over these questions because we simply don't have a way to just say definitively, these are wet inks, these are dry inks, because it's very subjective. But I thought Brian being here, he does have a new, you know, perspective than Brian Goulet or I have. So I just wanted to just kind of check in with you and let you offer, you know, your opinion on the matter.
Yeah, it's a tough one because, as Drew noted, it is super subjective. And there's some people, literally, you could take, you know, five inks, and I think one's the wettest. Drew could write with it and be like, these all feel the same.
Especially if it's a different pen on a different piece of paper.
And that's it, too. Your paper will make a huge difference. If it sucks the ink right in, it's not going to feel, or it might feel really wet because it's like right into the page. If you're writing with a double extra fine, nothing's really going to feel very wet writing. So as a general guideline, number one, if you want to talk to us and be like, hey, what are your favorite wet inks? I can give you recommendations all day long because I've tried a lot of inks, too many inks. But from that, you've got the reviews on our website, you got the slider. So I know you don't want to go through all 800. So general rules, guidelines that can take you to the right inks. You're going to want to look. You can sometimes look to dry time to figure out if something's going to be really wet. So if you're using decent paper and you've got a medium nib from Twisby, if the dry time shows as really long, odds are very high that the ink is a wetter writer because there's higher amounts of surfactants in the ink, aka not water, which will take longer to dry. And not water makes your ink flow a little faster. And so there's that. You've got darker inks. Yeah. So if you look at Sailor Haha.
Very light ink.
Or Wendy Darling.
Very, very, very light ink.
They are dry as a bone because there's not a lot of pigment in there. Not a lot of dye in this case.
Wendy Darling is like writing with colored water.
Yeah. It was really odd. I did the examples for it on the website and I was like, trying to see. I couldn't even see it. So those really light inks are not going to be wet flowing inks just because there's not really a lot that needs to get out of the pen. But if you go to really dark inks like Lummi Dark Lilac or the Blackberry Azurite, just from Lummi, those darker inks are much wetter flowing than the really dry stuff like regular Lummi Blue, Lummi Red, because there's more dye that needs to come
out. I've heard that Ferris Wheel Press is generally, you know, broad stroke, a dry-ish brand.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's not entirely true, I think that to your point, they do have a lot of light colors.
Yeah.
So I think that that's where that conclusion can be drawn. And
yeah,
for, you know, maybe 70% of the inks, that's true. But they also have a lot of heavily saturated ink, especially now with the addition of the Fairy Tales line. All those are very saturated inks.
They are. And what I've noticed with Shimmer Ink, too, is that they have to be, they should be, I think, a little wetter flowing to get the shimmer onto the page. If they're really light colored and they're really dry flowing, it just kind of doesn't feel good coming out of your pen, and they don't work that great.
Yeah.
But otherwise, for brands, it's kind of all over the place. We've got some brands that have really dry ones, light ones like Sailor with, you know, 400 different colors of ink.
And you need to get those colors, you put entirely different ingredients in your inks.
Exactly.
Like completely different. Any sort of red ink is going to have a completely different ingredients list than a, you know, light blue ink. Like, to the point where they almost can't even be compared by property, because it's like comparing vegetable soup versus mashed potatoes.
I love this because they, all the inks are inks. They're all, you know, it's apples to oranges. You know, the both of those are fruit, but they are very different fruit.
Yes.
So.
Okay, so apples and oranges is better than mashed potatoes and soup.
Mashed potatoes and soup. Yeah. Oh, boy. But yeah, no, definitely. Oh, yeah. Phone a friend. Ask someone. A lot of community input from Goulet Nation, from Reddit, from everywhere, all Fountain Pen Network. People have made these lists and say, you know, if I like this one, I like this one. If I don't like this one, I don't like this one. And same thing for us. If you're going to email us and say, hey, like, send me some wet inks, tell me what you like. If you give me what you like and what you thought was wet, that's a starting point for me to say, like, okay, this one is wetter than Oxblood, this one's drier than Haha, this one, and I can slot my information directly into what you know.
Yeah. And dip pens and ink samples are also a great way to experiment. I know that you do have to buy something, but when I have a lot of swabs to do for our, you know, comparisons and things like that, it is so instantly obvious, because I really don't know what is going to happen. I dip my glass pen or my Kakamori nib in the ink, and I go to write the name, and sometimes it just gushes, and I'm like, okay, oh crap, I need to start writing a little bit larger.
Go.
Or it's really, really light, and I'm saying, like, oh, okay, well, I need to kind of slow down so I can get a little bit on the page. But you know immediately, especially if you're using a dip pen, like, you can totally pay attention to how quickly things are flowing. So
that
you do have to buy something, but you're going to know pretty fast. And if you don't want to commit to a bottle, of course, you know, sample's definitely the way to go anyway.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying the Sailor dip pen.
Oh, yeah, the Hokoro.
Yeah, the Hokoro's been a real joy for me. You can get a surprising amount of writing out of
them. I love those pens. I don't have one yet, though.
You can borrow mine whenever you want.
I mean, like, they're so cheap. Like, why not buy one?
I bought one for myself. Yeah. I didn't even get it written off for me.
Wow.
So I can take it home.
There you go.
Yeah.
All righty. And last question.
Okay. From Nick. Hello. Does the surface underneath the paper I am writing on affect how fast the nib tipping will wear out? I have a glass table as my desk, and if I write on a single sheet of paper on it, I can feel it press rather hard into the nib. Would it help my pen last longer if I put a writing pad under the paper or just wrote in the Rhodia pad without tearing out individual sheets?
Nick, the short answer is no, it doesn't matter, as long as you're using the right sort of pressure. The more detailed answer would be that if you are pressing hard enough to kind of feel something uncomfortable, then yeah, like, the surface is going to matter more. A properly tuned fountain pen should write under its own weight, and under its own weight, if that is the amount of pressure you're putting on it, you won't notice, you know, unless you're comparing 10 years of use, you won't notice a difference in, you know, tipping material deterioration. If you do have a heavier hand though, then I would say, yeah, a writing pad wouldn't simply be, you know, better for the nib, but it also would be more comfortable for you and the writing experience that you're trying to get after. If you also have a heavier hand than a more rigid surface like glass, you might run less of a risk in kind of putting undue pressure on the tines, one more than the other, if you were on a softer surface. But sometimes I like to write on a harder surface. I feel like the drag increases when I write on the top of a fresh pad of paper or on a writing or on a padded writing surface that I don't always enjoy, especially if I have a really fine nib. I don't like the way it kind of digs in a little bit. And granted, I'm not putting any pressure, but some nibs are so fine, they're still going to do that. Yeah. So I feel like I do prefer harder surfaces when I'm writing with a really, really fine nib, but that's just me. So it really depends on your what you're after. But like we've covered in other pen casts, the amount in which you would be wearing away tipping material by simply writing, like you have to either be writing on an extremely abrasive material or you need to be writing a ton with a lot of pressure. Like we're talking, you know, 10, 20, 30 years of a ton of use in order for you to see any difference. Unless you are writing very, very tough with a very odd angle, you're probably not going to notice a difference.
Yeah. Over 5 years of being here, I've talked to one customer who has legitimately worn down a nib. And it wasn't like down to the bone or like, you know, wheel coming or tire coming off the rim. Like it was just that he noticed a difference. Yeah. And this gentleman wrote, I think he told me like 30 pages a day he would write.
What pen was it?
He ended up, well, the final pen that he ended up with, because we went, he and I would email back and forth all the time talking about big, long emails about stuff. And really great guy, nice person. And he ended up with a 912 Waverly nib. Yeah, and he loved it. And that's what he wound up on. And then I think like two years later, he said like, oh yeah, I had to get another one.
So he wrote with a 912, 30 pages a day for 2 years.
Every single day.
Wow.
Yeah. And even at that rate, the pen would still be usable. He just...
probably flattened it a little bit.
Yeah, flattened it a little, especially with that angle, that upturn, things start getting weird. All
right, so that's an extreme. And I doubt that crazy. Nick here is writing 30 pages every single day. How did his wrist survive that?
I don't know. Like I write all day long, not continuously, but there is a pad of paper at my desk and that page gets filled up over and over and over again. And I write constantly and I have not done anything close to wearing down a nib.
No.
And you know, the idea of once you have two pens that you rotate through, your one pen now has 50% less use on it. But getting back to the paper and the material, it's just personal preference for me. I cannot write on a single sheet on our desks out there, especially with Tomoe River. It's like, I feel like
those surfaces are a little textured too.
Yeah,
like even this has a little bit of a texture to it. Mm-hmm. I don't prefer that. If it's a completely smooth texture,
like glass
or like heavily polished wood, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I also don't like writing on a single sheet on a soft surface like the writing mats. It kind of feels like I'm
too much drag.
It's like marshmallow.
Yeah
my go-to is always I just leave it on the pad.
Yeah,
even if I tear it out and stick it back on top of the pad, one or two sheets of paper feels good for me.
That's generally what I do as well. And again, like I just let my pen do the writing. I don't have any downward force, and really you shouldn't have to do that. If you get the feeling that you're pushing too hard and to the fact that you're concerned about the longevity of your tipping material, there's probably something else wrong that you might consider addressing through the use of a nib specialist or technician that might need to kind of fine-tune your pen so that it does write under its own weight.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that does it for the Q and the A section of our pencast today.
Ta-da.
We are going to jump into the pen spotlight. We are going to spotlight several pens that we do not carry, will never carry, and that no one should ever, ever own or use or even look at. But you can look at them if you want, because they are going to be Brian's Franken pens. All right, so, what do we have here, Brian?
This is a classic. Some folks have seen this before. This is my Twisby VAC 700R with a Pennider quill nib on it.
Oh, my goodness.
It writes real nice.
That, you know what? I love that nib so much. I really do. It's one of my favorite nibs.
Yeah. And it just barely clears the inside of that cap.
So what did you have to manipulate to get that in there?
Nothing.
It just threads in?
Oh, no. I took the nib. This is stock Twisby feed and unit.
And you just shove the nib on there?
Well, the quill nib has such a small radius at the base of the nib here that it can fit in a lot of other, on a lot of other feeds. God.
Please don't do this, everybody.
Yeah, don't. So it from Pennider, they're in a Bach 250 mm-hmm. housing, their number 6 Bach housing. And the Twisby geometry is very close to Bach on the feed, at least. And yeah, it works great. This
wow.
turned a VAC 700R into a $400 pen.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I like this one a lot.
Wow.
So that's nothing too crazy. Let's see.
Yeah, can you bring everything over kind of toward the middle? There we go.
Various abominations. Let's All start. Right. So this is where the Mont Blanc ended up.
On a Magnum?
On a Diplomat Magnum.
Oh, my God. You are kidding me.
Yep. That's a lovely nib. It's a medium. Nice and smooth. It is a little loose on this feed.
Oh my God, Brian.
But it works fine. It's got great flow.
Oh my God. That's like a $300 nib on a $15 pen.
On a $15 pen.
Oh
yeah.
My God.
Well, I mean, the original Mont Blanc was a plastic pen. I'm sorry, precious resin.
Right.
Precious resin pen. Snap cap.
So that's the astronaut pen.
Yep. Well, now it is.
You're right. The astronaut husk pen is somewhere just nibless, right?
Yes. Oh yeah. Well, I know where it is. The body cracked.
Oh.
That's part of the reason why I took the nib out. So
you heard it here first, folks. Diplomat Magnum better than a Mont Blanc.
Yeah. Well, actually, I do like that stock. Extra fine is great.
Yeah.
This is a fun one.
What?
This was a challenge one day.
What?
Someone asked, can you put a parallel nib unit in an Ahab? So I took the grip section out to my shed, and I put a bigger hole in it.
Oh my God.
And I did, I had it eyedroppered, but yeah, we'll not pull it out, but it's just kind of barely in there, but it works. And
so
also the
just,
hole's not straight. So it's kind of got some English
God.
To it.
Oh
yeah,
my God.
It's a fun calligraphy.
So you just shove it in there.
Yep.
And how is it not leaking? It's just, it doesn't seem tight enough.
I mean, the feed on this thing is hefty.
I guess, yeah, there's just the ink would need to do a lot of work to get out of there.
Yeah. And it does have a little bit of a interference fit, right?
Okay. Yeah, there. I heard a click.
Yeah. So that works great. That's a fun one. I wish I had gotten the hole straight.
That's still kind of amazing, though.
Let's see. This one, I made this for Catherine, and it is very... Okay. We've got a Cuico Sport, Frosted Sport, with a Monteverde One Touch Rollerball N-Gage, very long name, rollerball unit in there. That does take fountain pen ink, and you can see the Cuico converter in the back. And this thing actually writes great. It feels really weird.
So you're just holding it by the refill.
Yeah. But
well, I guess it's not a refill. It's
It's a whole nib unit.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a whole unit. Yeah, this thing's great. You couldn't eyedropper it anymore because that's not totally tight.
Oh my God.
But yeah, it writes really well.
Did you have to do any mods or just
that fit right
in there?
Yeah. That was fun. And it does fit, it seals up perfectly. This pen's probably been inked for over a year and a half.
Oh my God. Is this the most used Franken pen, do you think?
Oh yeah, she actually uses this thing. So.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's cool.
I just saw this one for the first time yesterday. I did not know it existed.
It does the trick.
That's incredible.
The latest iteration of shoving VP nib units into
Oh my God.
Pens they don't belong into.
That has a VP nib unit. Oh my God, you monster.
Yep. So
it's so tiny. Look at it.
Twisby Go with a little tiny VP nib unit coming out of there.
God.
Yep. So I ended up, you take apart the Go And you take the innards out, and I had to cut this down, bore out a hole, because the VP unit's got a step down, and what I wanted was the nib to come out a little bit further, but I ran into an issue with the width up here and the nub.
Right. So you needed to carve a nub channel.
Yeah, so I took the X-Acto knife and carved a nub channel.
Oh my god.
But it turns out it's still too wide. So I still, this is version one. We're gonna have version two at some point.
We don't need a version two.
Yeah. So that's a fun one.
Can you can't actually fill it by dipping it, can you?
You can, but you've gotta like wiggle it to get the ink up into there.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
That's a trip. And this fits in there.
Wow.
Nicely as well.
All right, which one is your favorite?
Oh boy. Well, for actual using, the VAC 700R wins, but out of all of them,
the Peniter 700R.
Yeah, the Peniter 700R. I would say the VP nib unit in the Go, cuz it transforms the pen into something very small.
Something. Oh my gosh.
It's sturdier than putting it in the
What's the back section of that?
Of this?
Yeah. Like, is that
all part of a Go.
That's a Go? The clear?
Yeah.
I thought, so that's not, oh, okay.
Yeah, usually.
That's not frosted at all?
Well, there's so much other extra material and the spring and the plunger.
Oh.
That usually you don't see right through
this.
Yeah,
I would have said that was frosted. I didn't know that was completely clear.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And the Go is very durable too. And you put it on a lanyard around your neck.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wow.
Frankenpens.
Absolutely. So what is your next plan?
Oh boy. I've got a lot of parts floating around. I do want to try and, well, yeah, with the Go, I want to cut one down. So I was looking at the original design, and if you negated the filling mechanism and just capped it off and let it be a little well, or you know how I was telling you about I wanted to cut the rod down and thread it?
Yes.
Yeah, so that would be interesting. So I want to modify
one. You want to make it like really teeny.
I want to make it as small as possible, so which would essentially be the...
You were talking about
it
like...
It would be cut down to like right there.
Right, and you were saying like you're going to attach the back end back to the barrel somehow.
So you could thread it in so...
How are you going to do that? With like epoxy or...
I mean, I could just thread them. Or I could replace the rod with a like just a piece of threaded all thread or a
bolt. That's amazing.
But yeah, if you could make that rod removable, you could sit there and fill the pen and then just unscrew the rod, take it away, and then your barrel could be like that short. Yeah.
There will be plenty of people that are going to want to see that when it happens.
Yeah, so theoretically the pen could be like that big.
Oh my god. That'd be something.
It would be something.
Golly. Yeah.
Everyone needs a new pocket pen.
Yes, that's what they need. Mm-hmm. That exact thing. Okay, well, that is it for our pen spotlight.
Abominations.
Yes, we are going to jump into what's happening with Brian and Drew, except it's Brian and not Brian.
Other Brian.
Get ready. All right, what is happening with Drew Brown? I, over the weekend, went to the movie theater, mm-hmm. and I saw Dune Part 2.
I'm so jealous.
With my brothers. I didn't really expect to love the first one as much as I did. I went to see it when we had one of our like mental health half days.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Let's go see this movie. I heard it looked very visually interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was long. I'm like, all right, let me go to the Cinebistro. I order a coffee, a little dessert, and I'm like, I'm just going to chill out and mental health, you know?
It's a good day.
And I loved it. And I remember being confused about the plot, but just visually it was just alluring. And just I was just enamored with everything on screen.
Yeah,
gorgeous. Then I watched it again with subtitles. I'm like, okay, I understand it now. Because people kind of whispered a lot in that movie. I just kind of had a hard time hearing a lot of things.
Yeah, there's not a lot of... Yeah, I read the book,
mm-hmm.
and I read the book years before they announced the remake of the movie. And when I saw the film, I was blown away with how close it was to the book. And I've read almost all the books. I have not gotten through the fourth one yet, or the ones from his son. But yeah, I'm super excited to see number two.
There's a scene on the on Gedai Prime, the Harkonnen homeworld,
mm-hmm.
that they wanted to make look really just different and eerie and kind of just explain visually the setting of that world and why the Harkonnens are just the way they are. Mm-hmm. But they wanted to tell the story just by like, hey, look at where they live. And let's explain to the audience that they live in just an odd place and that kind of influences their behavior. And visually, it was one of the most incredible you know, examples of cinematography I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, the movies are just gorgeous.
This was next level, though.
Really? Like,
they shot it in infrared.
Whoa.
Yes.
That's like they, interesting.
And it was a big risk because the director was saying that the cinematographer, he just told the cinematographer he wants it to look kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And he's like, maybe we should do black and white. He's like, no, I want to do it in infrared.
That's crazy.
But the crazy thing was that you couldn't add color to it after the fact.
Yeah.
So you'll have to see it. I'm not going to go into detail because it really is something special. But that right there just floored me. And it was like a three plus hour movie. And I was still engaged the whole time, which is just wild.
Yeah.
So that was fun. We had a great time. Afterwards, my brother wanted to just kind of like go to a bar and chat about the movie. So I'm like, okay, cool. So we tried to find something, but it was over at Stony Point. And there's just nothing over there. So we ended up at just... Pardon me. We ended up just walking over to PF Chang's
and
sitting at the bar. And because I don't drink, you know, my brothers ordered some beers and I just had some soup because I'm like, I want to patronize the establishment.
Did they give it to you in a mug?
No.
Or a little teacup?
No, it's just a bowl of soup. It was some sweet and sour soup or hot and sour, whatever. But I'm like, I don't want to just be a freeloader sitting at the bar taking up a space. I'm like, I'll just have some soup.
Do you guys have any noodles too?
What happened first was, even though I had already had two cups of coffee at the movie theater, I looked at the bartender and I asked her, like, do you have coffee? And she looks at me and says, yeah.
You don't want that coffee.
Right, that's exactly what she... And I've been to bars before and done that, and I know that look because bars traditionally do not have coffee.
No.
And I knew then, and she fessed up. She's like, it's probably been brewing for about 12 hours. I was like, okay, you know what? Yeah, thank you. And she's like, yeah. So, and that happens. That's fine. I don't expect bars to have good fresh coffee at all. But if it's there, sure, why not? But yeah,
what
it was
I would
just
expect.
Funny. Her face just was like hilarious. She's like, yeah.
She didn't offer to make you a fresh pot?
No, and it's fine. I'm not going to do that to them.
I wonder if coffee is even on the menu at PF Chang's.
Probably not.
Yeah, I haven't been to a PF Chang's in many moons.
Usually I kind of look behind the bar, see what's going on. You know, only on rare occasions do I ask. But since I knew we were going to be there a while, we just wanted to kind of chat about the movie and kind of decompress and mention, you know, some things. It's fun. And I don't get a ton of time to hang out with my brother. So it was a good day.
That's good.
And then, like I said, that evening, my wife went to our friend's house. They were having a karaoke person. They actually got the karaoke guy who goes to, you know, the club they usually go to come to the house to do it. And so
cool.
It was a big old production. Yeah. I stayed home, though, because I had just 30 minutes between me coming back from the movie and needing to go back out to that. I was going to go, not sing, but just kind of be there and be present. But I was just kind of like, I'm socialed out. So we just kind of chilled the rest of the night. I just played some video games, and Archer just, I think we ordered some pizza or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love getting a pizza. And
Pizza Hut stuff across, man.
Mm.
And then ran some errands. We split up. Shannon went to Marshall's and Target, and I went to Home Depot, and Archer chose to go with her rather than me. So, yeah, I went to Lowe's first. They didn't have what I needed, so I had to go to Short Pump. I wanted to get some pegboard.
Yeah.
And Lowe's only had it in these massive sheets, and they didn't have the ability to cut it for me. Their cutter thing was...
Oh, it's never worked. It's like the ice cream at McDonald's.
Yeah. Yeah. So they said, oh, you can go to Short Pump. So I just went to Home Depot, which is slightly closer than the Short Pump Lowe's. And they had smaller sheets of pegboard.
That's good.
And so what I was going to do for Archer, he has this massive... You know, one of those like big bucket things you cram full of toys, you know, it's like you've seen them, the big old plastic bucket with like rope handles, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He's got like so many Nerf guns in that thing. He can never find what he's looking for.
Did you put them all up on a pegboard?
My plan was to put them, hang them on a pegboard.
So like a gun rack?
Yes.
Ah, that'd be cool.
So I thought that would be good. So I got the white pegboard and I started wheeling it around. I also bought a piece of lumber to fix a part of our deck and some other things, some paint for the exterior window frames. I've been sitting on a bunch of errands, a bunch of housework for while, and it's been really irritating me. So I got up the motivation to finally at least buy the supplies for it. But I had the pegboard, right? And then I realized, wait, how do I mount this? Because I was just going to screw it into the wall. But if I screw it in the wall, there's no separation from the wall.
Put it on the frame.
Right. So yeah. I'm like, oh, wait, I'm not doing that. Yeah. So I put it back and then found these plastic, like, you know, I think they were more than a foot, maybe a foot and a half by foot and a half, plastic squares of black pegboard. Mm-hmm. And they had the standoffs already built into the plastic mold. So there's five. There's one on each corner and then one in the middle. And I'm like, okay, there we go. So I bought four of those. They were a little bit more expensive, but they look nicer, a little bit more clean looking. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to have any sort of frame or standoffs, you know, in addition to it. Yeah. And they came with all the mounting hardware.
That's easy.
Or so I thought. Because I get home, I put one of these up, and after I drill my holes and put in the anchors that it came with, I put in one of the anchors, drill my screw into the anchor, and it just shoves the anchor clear through. Because the anchor has no rim on the front of the anchor. Just go straight in. So
that's funny.
I'm like, and I did it. I thought it was a fluke because I've never had that happen. And then I got one in there, drilled a little bit into it, shoved a couple toothpicks in it, and then it worked.
The toothpicks are a good idea.
But then I'm like, I'm not doing this. So I went into my, you know, my attached little shed storage room, got out some smaller screws that had included anchors with the rim on them, and those worked just fine.
That's
good. I'm like, why would an anchor not have a rim?
Maybe, like, it was made for not drywall.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I guess it's you either anchor in drywall or concrete.
It was terrible. Terrible. So anyway, after I figured that out, I got the Nerf guns hung up. I think it looks freaking awesome.
That's dope.
Like, Archer was not excited about it at all. But then he went up after I had set up everything, and he was like, oh, my God.
So now we can hang it all up and look at it. And
he was like, yeah.
I choose.
That's what he said. He's like, and when my friends come over, I'm going to come up, and I'm going to say, choose your weapon.
Yes.
So he's all excited about it now, so I was happy.
That's really cool.
Definitely, I could have done other projects that were more helpful to the home, but I did that one first because it was just more fun. But, yeah, it looks pretty rad. I'll show you a picture. Yeah, I bought my first saw.
Yeah.
Don't own a saw, but I own a saw. I had a hacksaw, but the last couple times I've gone to use it, it hasn't been long enough. So I've gone to saw something and then it just stops at the frame, which was kind of hilarious because the saw I bought, like I was telling you, has this, like, you know, what is this?
You bought a miter saw.
Miter saw, okay. I thought it was called a box saw. Maybe it's the same thing. I don't know. But it has a strip of metal across the top of the saw. So when I'm sawing the wood, it stopped once the top of the saw went far enough into the wood. So I had to flip it around and get it from the other side. So I still don't have – it's like kind of the same thing as my hacksaw. I have the same problem. I can't go all the way through.
You have a vertical issue now instead of a horizontal issue.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's that spine is to give it rigidity. So it makes a really straight cut.
Okay. I mean, and it did.
Yeah.
It looked smooth. But, yeah, I felt dumb.
Well, anyway. Now you got two saws.
Yay. I bought some new patches.
Oh, yeah.
I got a Scorpion and a Sub-Zero.
That's cool.
That I have on the side of my jacket, so they're facing each other. Mm-hmm. And then I bought two. I'm starting on my sleeves because I wasn't doing anything on my sleeves because I wanted to roll them up maybe. Yeah. But Shannon was like, no, it looks weird. Your sleeves look naked. So I was like, okay, cool. Excuse to buy more patches.
Yeah, there you go.
I got Monkey Island. Which is a 90s LucasArts like point-and-click adventure game that I loved as a kid. And also there's another one made by the same developer called Day of the Tentacle. So I got that on each forearm. I used to love those games. They were pretty chill. Like, you just get to, like, walk to, click, and then pick up blank, look at blank, push
fun.
Blank, pull blank. And a lot of it was just trial and error. Like, use monkey with fire hydrant. You're like, oh, my God, it works.
The monkey opened the fire hydrant.
Yeah. So I used to love those games so much. And they were so cleverly written as well. So got those represented.
That's cool.
And then just recently, I sewed those on. But just recently, I went ahead and bought some. I bought a one from Dick Tracy, like the Dick Tracy logo
from the
movie from the 90s. Mm-hmm. He had a really cool logo. It's like a circle with like his silhouette with a hat. I loved Dick Tracy when I was a kid. I was him for one Halloween. And then a couple other things. But yeah, still jumping on the patch train. I'd been keeping my eye out on this product called the Airfort, which is
Airfort,
a kind of an inflatable housing unit for a kid, either shaped like a rocket ship or a house or an igloo.
Cool.
And you Velcro one section of it to a box fan, turn it on, and then the whole thing just kind of poofs up.
I want that. Where were those when we were young?
Right. That was that. I say this every weekend, mm-hmm. like every time Archer gets something cool. I'm like, man, come on now.
I wanted an Airfort.
Yeah. So I haven't been wanting to do it because it's $60 a pop. And I'm like, that's kind of a lot. I don't know if he'll play with it. He's getting a little big. I don't know. But then I got served up an ad saying they were buy one, get one free.
Oh, yeah. Two.
So I was like, talk to my sister-in-law. I was like, hey, you want to kind of go halvesies on this? She's got a kid. I've got a kid. All right. So Shannon talked to her. But we went ahead and did that. So I ordered it. We got two, one for their kid, one for our kid. So $30 price tag, a little bit more reasonable.
Yeah.
So we got that. It's huge.
What kind is it?
It's a house, like a little cottage.
You bought him a tiny house.
Yeah. And hooked it up to the box fan. Worked as advertised. All three of us can get up into there. Like
that's awesome.
Now, the downside is that it's so big, he can't put it in his bedroom or his playroom. Like we've got, you know, he's got two rooms essentially, but our upstairs has pretty small rooms.
Yeah.
So he can't actually put it up either there. So we have to either put it up in the office downstairs, which is supposed to be a formal dining room that we just don't use, or the den, which I keep pretty wide open. But either way, he was using it. He was having a blast. He just chilled in there and played the Switch, you know, all weekend.
That sounds fine to me.
It's a pretty rad little toy.
Go in there, and because box fans aren't that loud.
No, they're really not.
So it would just be like nice chill place to read and play video games. Yeah, that sounds good. Maybe I'll see if we can get an Airfort for upstairs. Catherine would love that. Yeah.
Do you think you have room up there?
What's the footprint on it?
I think it's about like 90 inches. I don't know. But So that was pretty fun. So we had a good time. I also bought some mailbox numbers because I need to redo those.
Joy.
But I don't think that they're going to show up. It's like we have a natural wood, unfinished wooden pole for our mailbox.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make it sound intentional.
A blank 4x4?
Well, no, it's got the... Yeah, but it's not painted. There's some in the neighborhood that are black, some are white, and then some are naked. Ours is naked. It's got black letters on it, but when it was brand new, I'm sure the black letters, the numbers, looked good.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's not new, and it's not gray. Like old. It's not new. Yeah. It's not gray. It's still kind of brownish, but the black doesn't stand out as much. So I got these silver reflective ones, but those still don't look good. So I'm like, what?
Just paint the mailbox post.
Oh, then I have to keep painting it. Like our mailbox post at the last house was painted white. And
the bird poop all over.
Oh, yeah. Terrible.
That's fun.
So I'm like, it's going to look bad no matter what.
You could stain it.
Yeah, I could probably stain it.
And then you could, I have a whole like jug of Thompson's water seal. You could just douse it.
I think next time I get my deck redone, I'm just going to do the mailbox.
That's a good idea.
As well with whatever I use for the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
It's a good idea.
I'm probably going to take those back because I don't like them anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do. Mailbox numbers are stupid.
We put numbers on one side of the mailbox and not the other. It's almost a joke because people drive by and they're like...
I did remember to buy two sets.
Like, what house is that? And then they pass by and they're like, oh, it's...
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's funny. Cool. But I also have the numbers on the house.
So we don't have any numbers on the house. It's just the mailbox, yeah. Which I could do, but I don't care that much. It's just for the pizza guy.
Pretty much. I mean, it's all like if you put it in Google Maps now, there's literally a photo of my house there. So like my address could be like 80 numbers long and you would still find it just fine.
Yeah.
So, hey, what are you going to do?
Well, that's about it going on for me.
Yeah. I started building a shed.
See, I knew about this and I was like, wow, I'm not going to get away from shed talk.
Nope.
What is it with Brian's and sheds?
I need a new shed for all of my stuff.
So do you already have a shed?
Yeah, it's old though. So I found it came with the house.
Is this a replacement shed or just an additional shed?
It's an additional shed. Oh, okay. But we might tear down the old shed.
You put the things you don't care about in the old shed.
Yeah, currently that's everything is in the old shed. And it is leaking. It's always wet. The siding's coming off. I looked on the inside when I was putting up shelves around it, and someone had signed their name. It's like John 1992.
Oh.
That shed's almost as old as I am.
Wow.
So it's been around for a while. Usually they don't last that long. It's not set properly on the ground. There's like nails coming out of the ceiling.
Oh,
it's great. So I'm building a new one, and it was really difficult to do the base.
So you're doing the entire thing from scratch?
Yeah.
Wow. How do you if you do one thing wrong at this step, the whole thing is going to be lopsided and crooked.
Not really. So I was actually talking with Brian Goulet about this, and he said, your level of precision is not needed for this project.
Oh.
And that's a good point, because I'm used to working with thousands of an inch.
Yeah.
Millimeters, centimeters, I work in very fine, levels of precision for almost, machining. And what's good for machining is more than acceptable for everything else, but you can't go the other way around. Yeah, what's square in framing, not square in woodworking. What's square in woodworking won't work for machining.
Oh, God.
So my level of expectation for the squareness and straightness of this entire project needs to go way down.
Can you do that?
So far.
Has it been difficult?
I got the frame almost square, and I was like, oh, it's off by a quarter of an inch over 173-inch run. I'm like, that's a fine percentage.
Okay. So it hasn't been super difficult lowering your standards?
No, it was just, it's not difficult. It's just hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided not to buy a nail gun, which was a horrible idea when I started nailing the subfloor on by hand, just like 60 nails by hand. But I bought a new hammer. I really didn't even plan this, but I bought a brand new framing hammer for it. It's really cool looking.
So why did you need a new hammer for this task?
My regular hammer I had like a 18-ounce hammer.
Mm-hmm. Is that
too light?
That's too light. Okay.
Yeah, too light. Well, I mean, it would work fine, but it's also they make hammers with milled faces on them, so it's got like cross-hatched.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like knurled.
Yeah, it's knurling. Yeah. So when you
Brian's talked to me about that before.
Yeah, you hit the nail, it grabs on.
Yep. Yeah. We've covered this.
Yeah. So I've got the framing hammer has
during
a knurled
the hammer
face.
Section of the Pencast.
Yeah. So now and then, while I was building the thing, I was like, man, I like when I'm tapping the wood to square it up, I was like, man, I could really use a 4-pound engineer's hammer right now.
4-pound?
Yeah, it's a little. Little Thor hammer.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't buy that though. I'm not going to buy another useless hammer.
You can buy hammers after you get the shed. Have plenty of room for hammers.
Yeah, maybe I'll make one.
Make a hammer?
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. Have you made a axe handle?
I have rehung a few axe heads. I have not made a handle from scratch, though. Yeah. That is finding the right piece of straight wood.
Mm.
That would be a little difficult. Oh, you know what I saw on Reddit the other day? This guy, which is apparently what people have done in the past, but he put a bunch of old axe heads on saplings. And he's going to let the handle grow into it.
Oh, like Groot.
Yeah. So pretty much every comment on that whole thread was like, remind me 2 years, remind me 2 years, remind me 2 years. I'm really excited to see how that goes because that's cool.
Oh, you should do that.
Yeah, I probably should. I just have to pick which. Ideally, it would be like an ash or an oak sapling, something really hard and straight. That is not what grows on my property. It's all just trash.
Yeah.
And I've got one oak. But then I have to let a hammerhead sit outside for
years,
or an axe head sit outside for 2+ years.
Yeah.
That's an exercise in patience that I don't think I'm ready for.
I think you need to find like one that's already just like you just can barely fit the head onto
idea.
The branch.
Yeah. Let it grow around it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be cool.
You know, I wonder if you could like find a random tree in like a random park or something like that, like way off the beaten path.
Just chuck it on there.
And like, just, you know, get your coordinates down to the T.
Yeah. Then I have to go back and cut it down,
oh.
Which would be particularly illegal.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Especially in the city of Richmond, if you go into the park and cut down a tree, they're not
going to be you're right. I didn't even think about that part.
And then you walk out with it, too. Just like, oh, I just have an axe now, too.
My grandfather once gave me a small double-bladed axe. Mm-hmm. And I thought that thing was so cool, but it was so janky. And like the head would shake off. And I think I just threw it away 1 year. And I regret that so much.
Yeah.
Because that thing could have been, you know, rehandled. The blade could have been polished up. Like,
yeah, my main splitting axe is a Worth Tool axe marked Worth Tools, which was a small hardware store in Boston in the 50s. Wow. And so odds are high that the axe was not made by Worth Tools, OEM'd by one of the other axe manufacturers. And I found it at Fantastic Thrift for $6.
Oh, that's amazing.
And it was destroyed. I bought two speakers for my uncle that day and an axe. So I walked out of Fantastic Thrift holding speakers and an axe. Yeah, that was really great. So I took the whole thing home and I soaked it in vinegar and ground off the mushrooming on the back, put a new handle on it and resharpened it and boom, we're good to go. Yeah, that was fun.
That is cool.
But yeah, building the shed. It's gonna be weird. It's also gonna be raining for like 2 weeks.
I know.
So that sucks. I poorly timed my shed.
I think that we've had the wettest summer on record for Virginia. Shannon was telling me that the other day.
Spring, summer.
What just happened?
You said winter. Wettest summer.
Did I say summer?
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I meant to say though.
Wettest winter.
Winter.
Yeah, there's been no snow. We got like two snows.
Barely. Yeah. I didn't have to shovel anything.
Really disappointing. I bought a shovel like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, so you've been keeping the snow away.
It has not snowed enough for me to shovel since I bought the darn shovel.
Probably not since you bought the house.
Oh, no. Yeah, I bought the shovel when I lived in my, like, three apartments before the house.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've had it for a long time. Because when you live in the city, you're responsible for shoveling your front of your bit of the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
So I go out. I love shoveling snow. You know, grow up in Pennsylvania. What do you do for fun? Go shovel snow in the middle of winter. Yeah. But beside that, still working on a few knives. This is the one that we showed before. I've been working on this one on and off for over a year. And because I wanted to really like pay more attention to it. And so I've been working on that guy. And you know, I just realized we forgot to show this during the Pen Abominations.
What is that? Oh, that's that. Oh my God. All right, well, we can add this back in. Brian has a bonus pen abomination that we're going to show you here. All right, hang on. All right, go ahead.
Oh.
Yeah, bring it a little closer. Okay, so it looks like you have glued a Safari grip section to an ink sample.
I did. That's exactly what I did. It makes sampling very easy. Yeah, don't forget to let your super glue flash off before you put the cap on.
Beautiful. Absolutely stunning.
It's really hideous. And I trimmed it a little too short, so now the cap doesn't actually click on.
Oh, good. Oh, my God. What do you call this?
Probably just trash. But, no, this is the sample master, maybe.
Oh, my God.
Because you can just take a sample and screw it right on there.
Oh, my God. I love it.
It's extremely uncomfortable, too. And it doesn't post.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That's magical.
Stunning.
This one in particular, that was a broken pen.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, beside that, what else is new? Well, the shed is the thing that's, like, sucking up my life right now. I don't want it to, but it's going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's... I have no doubt it's going to be incredible, though. Is this the biggest, you know, woodworking project you've ever attempted?
Yeah. I mean, so the only reason I decided to do it, because, well, I was talking with my neighbor about this, like, so are you going to save any money? And I'm like, no, probably not. He's like, so like, it's going to be worth your time like to do it to, you know, I'm like, well, I'm going to learn how to frame. I'm going to learn how to put on a subfloor. I'm going to learn how to build a mild basic foundation. I'm going to learn how to sheathe the house. I'm going to learn how to roof. I'm going to learn how to frame a roof, you know, put shingles down. Like it'll be fun. Odds are high that it'll be thoroughly overbuilt because I'll just put way too many fasteners and clips and everything all that over
sounds
it.
Sounds like Goulet.
Yeah, so I'm going to build the crap out of it and then off we go.
That sounds amazing. I've thought about learning how to shingle because at one point I wanted to make a double-sided kayak.
Oh yeah, the holder
stand. Yeah, yeah, I talked
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah, but then I just stopped kayaking as much. Like every year that went by, I'm like, is this going to be worth it? So I'm not going to build something permanently into the ground that represents a hobby that I'm fading out of. I don't want to, but it just seems to be happening. So
well, we can, yeah, if you want to give it a whirl afterward,
go over
and try and build a kayak shed.
You take care of your second little home.
Oh, you're tall enough that I might need you to help me with the roof.
Happy to.
Woohoo!
Happy to. I've no doubt that if you want a favor from me, that I will have a use for your skills at some point. I have like my height is like my only marketable skill that I have. So yeah.
Glenn offered help too. That'd be fun. It's like me, you, and Glenn putting a shed together. That'd be funny. That would it's like the Three Stooges right there.
I actually might be involved in a kickball league this summer.
Mm.
Our friend Dan was like, hey, do y'all want to do this? Kind of like offhandedly. And Shannon and I were just kind of like, yeah,
sure,
actually. So I don't know. It seems kind of crazy. I haven't done anything that physical.
Like, kickball is fun.
Since I was a child.
Well, it's great now because like mean children won't be there. You'll just have adults, competitive adults. And the ball goes further?
Well, he insists it's not super competitive.
That's good.
So that was I was concerned about that. I'm like, because I'm not good at anything. So
I played once or twice on a friend's league, and it was...
Yeah?
It was interesting enough. I don't really like fun, though. I'm just kidding. No, I'm like so non-competitive that...
Yeah.
Like, if I kick the ball and it doesn't go where I want it to go, or we lose, I'll be like, eh, it's okay.
Yeah, same.
Like, meh. So that maybe that's my level of a kickball league is non-competitive kickball league.
Yeah.
It's apathetic kickball.
Yep. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
That can be your biography.
Apathetic kickball.
All right. Do you have anything else?
Oh, I think that's it.
All right. Well, we can just go ahead and wrap things up then.
Sounds good.
I want everybody to know that we appreciate you sticking around for this episode of the PennCast. If you have any questions, you can launch us an email at pencast@gouletpens.com. We have all of the links for the products that we discussed here today listed below. You can click them, get sent right over to the website where you can learn more about them, be it the various princess pens with all those cool designs or the mini Colorverse Season 8 colors. Mm. So those are all fascinating. Definitely worth checking out a little bit further, hearing a little bit more about the story that inspires all of that. For now, I think we can just jump into my fun fact. So normally Brian adds a fun fact, and I wasn't going to bother because I just didn't feel like it. However, I got a comment from Patricia Clark in response to a comment that we were, you know, discussing last week about whether or not we would ever buy an ink for the name or avoid an ink because of the name.
And
the consensus, like the Sailor Ink Studio stuff. Like I don't mess with those because I just can't remember this stuff.
Hmm.
But Patricia said that an ink I bought only for its name, Birmingham Pen Company's Green Weenie. Smiley face. So I don't know anything about Birmingham Pen Company. I've never heard of Green Weenie. But when she said that, I was like shook because my grandfather, who is an avid fisherman and boater, had a boat most of my childhood, and on the radio his call sign was Green Weenie, and I've never heard that term since then.
Green Weenie.
I'm like, why is she talking to me about an ink called Green Weenie? What the heck is Green Weenie? I just thought it was a greenish boat and it was small, so I thought that's what he was saying. It's like it's a wee green boat. No, turns out I wikied the Green Weenie. The Green Weenie was a sports gimmick in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, co-created by Bob Prince, the broadcaster for the Pittsburgh Pirates Major League Baseball team, and Pirate trainer Danny Whalen. It was most popular during the 1966 season. The Green Weenie was manufactured by Tri-State Plastics. So essentially what the Green Weenie was, Brian, was a green plastic rattle in the shape of a hot dog.
Wow.
Which, here we go, when waved at opposing players, purportedly put a jinx on them.
Oh, lucky.
A green hot dog.
A green hot
rattle.
Dog.
It would jinx people.
Man, you could, like, back in the day, you could make money off of anything.
It's amazing. Yeah. So, conversely, when waved at pirate players, those are your allies, it allegedly bestowed good luck.
Oh, okay.
So it would curse your enemies.
And then give good luck to your...
So you're just shaking at people.
We have to get a green meanie. Green weenie?
So in September, the H.J. Heinz Company offered a 3-foot inflatable version for $1.
That's a steal.
So the green weenie is essentially a plastic hot dog rattle to curse your opponents, your opposing baseball team. If you're a Pirates fan.
That's useful.
In the 60s and the 70s. So.
The more you know.
My grandfather wasn't a sports guy. So I don't. I guess he was, you know, definitely doing things in the 60s and 70s. So. That just kind of shook me up, man. I don't know.
The boat was green.
What
else
do
you call it? The green machine, the mean green.
It had
the green,
a name, green though. Weenie. Here's the thing. It had a name. On the back, he had painted, or my aunt, somebody had painted Inez, which is my grandmother's maiden name or middle name. A little Z with a fish hook on it.
So like, it had two names. So the boat had the name.
It had the name.
His
which
call
was,
sign was green meanie.
He never called green it the Inez. Like, that was like out of love and respect for his wife, but he never called it. He called it the freaking green weenie, which I'm like, why don't you just...
It's a funny joke.
Yeah. Papa. Yeah. Anyway, that's the green weenie. It's weird. This has been Pencast episode 125. Brian, yes, thank indeed. You so much for being Brian.
Yes, you're very welcome.
We need a Brian to balance the scales.
I hope I did a good job. I am not Brian Goulet. I am the other Brian.
And yet still we talked about sheds and hammers.
Yeah, I didn't. I feel kind of bad now. Should have brought something more interesting in than... The same. I do not have any bags of rocks or buckets of rocks around.
You haven't finished your shed yet.
I literally asked Brian when he was talking about the rock thing. I was like, you just have buckets of rocks sitting around? He's like, yeah. Where else do you keep your rocks? I'm like, on the ground.
He told me a rock acquisition story yesterday that I'm not even going to discuss because I'm sure he's going to say something about it next week. So we'll just leave y'all with that. But Brian Goulet has acquired more rocks. So
I just, the concept of paying for rocks is detestable to me.
Oh, these he didn't pay for.
Oh.
But anyway, we don't need to do this. This is my week off from rock discussions. So thank you so much. Appreciate you all for sticking with us. Thank you for joining us here today. Have fun and ride on.
Bye.